It's called The Black Man Is God. It's called The Black Man Is God. Next album. This is for the children. You know what I'm saying? I got this idea from myself, of course, but this is for the children. I got.
Make this prediction. This will be the biggest upset in all fighting history. The easiest fight of my life.
You think your cousin can whoop me? You really do? Anybody on your watch? Anybody in my family?
He's young. He's handsome. They know it. He's a poet, a prophet.
Goal ain't have a net. Who would have dreamed from karaoke to cassette? I met OB as an OG in the Jackson. Nah, I was legends, rest in peace, Pop's a legend, Mike Corey and Sean Jordan was the essence of the young chorus where we grew from. Seemed like a second, now they less important to the new sun. I guess today weighs more than yesterday, it's morbid to suggest today will come for them too. When it's a brother younger than you, who humble and who? Used to coach him, now he coached and blew up, who knew? He caught you on a rough night, you were stumbling through. Now he telling you to get yours, get yours.
All of you reporters made it hard on them.
Congratulations to the Philadelphia Eagles, Super Bowl champions 2017-18. Didn't think I'd be saying that this morning, or excuse me, this evening. It is late on Monday, February the 5th of 2018. Happy New Year. It's the first time we've spoken to you in the new year. It's Jay Hicks with the Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast, the preseason podcast of the year. Back at it, y'all, flying solo on this Thoughtful Daddy edition of the podcast, trying to keep the voice down a little bit. My son is asleep. We will do our best not to wake him up and disturb him, or he will be disturbing his father for the rest of the evening if that happens. So, but yeah, man, welcome to the podcast. Everybody's talking about the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 52. The amount of defense that was played in the Super Bowl was embarrassingly optional. I mean, I've never seen a game with that little defense in the NFL, let alone the championship game of all games. That was, man, defensive players rolling over in their graves, man. That was something else. That was football in 2018, a 7-on-7 drill. Flag football is what that was in the Super Bowl. The Patriots ought to be ashamed of themselves for their defensive performance. And yet the defensive coordinator is the head coach of the Detroit Lions as of this morning. So shout out to all my Detroit people. How you feeling this morning? We know how the fans of Philadelphia are feeling. So I don't know too many Eagles fans. I know a couple. Shout out to Tone. Shout out to Sharonda. You all know who you are. So shout out to y'all for y'all teams winning the Super Bowl. I know that being from Cleveland, it was something special when the Cavaliers won the Super Bowl 2 years ago, or a year and a half ago, 2 seasons ago, however you want to look at it. That was something special, and that was an experience as a fan that you would not want others to miss out on. Like, you would not want another fan base to not experience that level of euphoria at some point in their life. So from that standpoint, I am happy for Eagles fans, and I am very proud to say congratulations to you. And just don't tear your city down, y'all. Just don't tear your city to the ground. You know, there's no need to rebuild the great city of Philadelphia from the ground up. Why are people tearing out street posts and jumping on traffic lights and eating horse shit on camera? Why are you guys doing that? You're better than that, Philadelphia. Come on. I mean, I get it. It's exciting. You guys won the Super Bowl. It's obviously once in a lifetime thing. The Eagles have never won one before. They haven't won a championship since 1960. I get it. You're excited and all that. Can we not eat horse waste? I don't think that's asking too much to not eat horse waste. That's gross. There's no reason to ever do that. There's no reason to climb on any and everything you can climb on, or to just destroy property for no real reason. I mean, I'm just saying, but But enjoy your championship nonetheless. It was great. So shout out to Philly. Kevin Hart was wilding. Will Smith wilding. Everybody's wilding. Shout out to Philly for that. Y'all know where y'all can find the podcast. iTunes, Stitcher Radio as well. And you know we're on Twitter and Facebook. Twitter.com/HHS Report. Facebook.com/HHS Report. Got some new things coming in 2018, y'all. So be on the lookout for that. Some new mediums that we're going to explore and get into a little bit. So just be on the lookout. Keep your eyes peeled. But I did want to take a little bit of time. I know everybody else has already kind of given their opinion on the Super Bowl. You probably heard them all day long. And this is the only time I can get to do it. It's late at night in the comfort of my own basement slash man cave slash my son's playpen as I stare in the... This is the HHSR Studios, and I look around and I just see an abundance of toys everywhere, and that's my cross to bear as a father of a young child. You know, every 10 steps you step on something, it's a toy, and you sit down on the couch and there's a toy stuck up your ass, another one. They're just all everywhere, but you know you wouldn't change it for the world, right? So yeah, please subscribe to the website and follow the website, subscribe to the podcast. As soon as you can. Yeah, man, Super Bowl 52. Congrats to the Eagles again. They deserve to win. Basically, it was a pretty even game. They made one more play at the end, the Brandon Graham strip of Tom Brady. 1 year ago today, I believe to the day, I got on this podcast and had a lot of glowing things to say about Tom Brady after leading a 25-point comeback to win Super Bowl 51. We're going to get to Brady shortly, but I did want to start with the Eagles. Made one more play. Doug Peterson, terrific coach, terrific game plan. He pretty much had the exact right calibration of aggressiveness. It wasn't so aggressive that it was over the top. They were making ridiculous mistakes or anything like that. He wasn't so timid that he was scared to make a move, scared to go up against and match wits with Belichick or anything like that. So that was great to see from a Philly standpoint. You know, the calls to go for it on fourth down, the execution on third down, first of all. And the Eagles should not be lost on anybody that the Eagles were the best third down team in football all season. So to see them flourish on third down in the Super Bowl should not have been a surprise. But they also went 2 for 2 on fourth downs in the game, and I think they were, if memory serves, 12 of 18 total on third and fourth down. There was also no punts in that game. There was one punt by Philly, no punts by New England. That's not something that you see every day. But again, man, you got to take your hat off to Philly. I just thought that, you know, watching the game, I came into it expecting that, you know, and I wrote this on the site in our Super Bowl preview. I expected Philadelphia to be in the game. I expected Philly to make it a very competitive game. But basically, the way that Philly was in control throughout the game, that's pretty much what I expected New England to be. I expected it to be competitive and close like it was, but I expected New England to be in control and in the driver's seat from the word go, as opposed to the Eagles being in the driver's seat. And then I expected the Patriots to pull away and cover at the end, cover the 4.5 at the end of the game. Not necessarily out of a sense of like they dominated the Eagles or anything like that, because I didn't think that. In fact, I had a lot of respect for the Eagles throughout this entire playoff process. I wrote about it on Twitter, said that people were disrespecting them in the divisional round. I picked them to beat the Falcons. I did not pick them to beat the Vikings or Patriots, but I thought they were very capable of winning either one of those games. And so it wasn't a case of me not so much believing in their ability, but at the same time, I just kind of thought that the teams that they were running up against were better teams, and they proved to be the best team. And what's interesting, too, is if you look at Nick Foles, who turned into Dan Marino last night, I'm going to pull up Nick Foles' statistics from the last Eagles game of the season, and you would not think that that's the same quarterback. Like the guy, even the Falcons, Nick Foles, the Nick Foles against the Falcons, he was like looking kind of, you know, shaky at best, obviously. If you look at, if I could click on the right game, they lost to the Dallas Cowboys 6-0 on the last day of the season. Now, I can understand if the Eagles had already clinched, they had already sewn up the number one spot, the number one seed in the NFC. And I can understand. Well, okay, so, let's backtrack. They lost 6-0 in the final regular season game of the year. Nick Foles only threw 11 passes in that game, though. But he was 4 of 11 for 39 yards and a pick. Okay, I don't think his intention was to go 4 for 11 for 39 yards and a pick in that game against the Cowboys at home. I don't think it was Philly's intention, regardless of the fact that they had already sewn everything up. I don't think it was the Eagles' intention to go scoreless in that game against the arch-rival Cowboys. Something tells me that that was not in Doug Peterson's game plan. It may not have been, winning may not have been a priority that day, but I don't think going scoreless was a priority either. But let's look at the last full game we saw from Nick Foles prior to the playoffs against the Oakland Raiders, who did not make the playoffs. He was 19 of 38 for 163 yards, one touchdown and one pick, a passer rating of 59.4, and a QBR of 23.7, if you're into that sort of thing. He was not good. He was not good. In fact, one would say he was trash in that game. And it was reasonable for people to question what Nick Foles would be in this contest, given what he had been in, I don't know, the last several years, pretty much ever since he and Chip Kelly went their separate ways. Nick Foles was never really the same quarterback. He bounced around a bit, went to the Rams, went to the Chiefs, which I've forgotten about, comes back to Philadelphia. And all of a sudden, the light bulb just clicked on in the playoffs, and he was amazing in the NFC Championship game against the Vikings, who have an exceptional defense. And he was equally as impressive, if not more so, against the Patriots, who have a middle school defense. And you have to, regardless of the level of competition he was playing in those two games, collectively with the stage and all that, and the fact that he's filling in for an MVP candidate and everything, and he has this city that's he's trying to carry to the championship, and they haven't won one. They haven't won a championship of any kind in football in, what was it, almost 50 years? 60 years? 50 years. Almost 50 years, I guess it would be. No, wait a minute. What year was that? It's going to be 60 years in 2020. That is amazing. So, I mean, that's a lot of pressure. Since 1960 was the last time since the Eagles had won one. That's a lot of pressure, right, for them to be under. And you know, they always say when a guy goes in there with when he's an underdog, and granted, Philly took this underdog thing and owned it, but they always go in and say, you know, he's got nothing to lose. It's like, yes, he does. He could lose the Super Bowl. He had a lot to lose. Nick Foles had a lot to lose. He had a lot of money to lose. He's a backup quarterback. He might be a starter next season now for somebody. He has the contract situation that, you know, he's going to get a deal somewhere. That stuff's important. He had a lot to play for. He had a Super Bowl to play for. He had teammates to play for. He had a city to play for, a family, all that stuff. So, no, it's not like he had nothing to lose. He had a whole lot to lose. But he came through, and good on him for doing that. So, shouts to Nick Foles for being an MVP. He was 28 of 43 for 373, three scores, one pick, passer rating of 106.1, a QBR of 88.6. He also caught a touchdown pass. So, I mean, he was near flawless. The one interception that he threw was on a tipped ball deep downfield that was kind of on a fluky play. I mean, you just got to give it to him, man. He was always in control from start to finish. Made nothing but great throws. On the last drive, the final drive, I think the Patriots took the lead at 33-32 with about 9 minutes left. And Philadelphia took over deep in their own territory. They held that ball for about 7 minutes of that 9 minutes. I mean, they held it almost into the two-minute warning before they finally scored a touchdown to Zach Ertz, who, by the way, Zach Ertz, unstoppable yesterday. New England had no answer for, they had no answer for anything New England did. But, I mean, Alshon did his thing. But Zach Ertz was, he caught 7 balls for 67 yards and a touchdown. Every pass Zach Ertz caught was either for a big gain or it came at a crucial point in the game. Third down conversion, fourth down conversion. He had the big fourth down conversion on that game-winning drive. And then he caught the touchdown pass, which on the catch that was a little bit questionable at the end there, but I thought that was clearly a touchdown. I mean, the guy established himself as a runner. He dove across the plane and the ball squirted up. Although I did see on Facebook a little side-by-side between that play and the Dez Bryant play in the playoffs against the Packers a few years ago. damn it if they don't look like identical plays. They look pretty close to identical. And here, obviously, the Cowboys got hosed and the Eagles got the touchdown. But I thought it was a touchdown. I think the thing is, with the whole catch, non-catch rule, my quick 2 cents on it, y'all. Basically, you want to, they have to have some type of nuance in the rule, the way it's written, because they can't leave it totally up to judgment, because that's going to get them in trouble, especially when they start talking about, when people like to insinuate that there's cheating or that there's collusion or the league wants this team to win versus that team. That's why you need nuance written in the rule itself. So when people complain about how the rule is written right now, and I agree, it needs to be changed. But the reason it's written the way that it is to eliminate any type of doubt or suspicion or things of that sort. So when you talk about guys, well, he's bobbling it. Does he have possession? Does he finish the motion? Does he complete the process through the ground? All that stuff. As much as you and I and everybody else hates that stuff, it is necessary to some degree. So, but when I looked at the Zach Ertz play, you know, if they would have taken that off the board for Philly, that would have been in violation of the spirit of what the rule was intended to be. So the spirit of the rule is, you know, obviously the guy catches it, he dove for the end zone, and when he kind of hit the ground, the ball kind of squirted out, and he ended up rolling on the ground and still catching it. To rule that as an incomplete pass would have been in violation of what the spirit of the rule is. That was a touchdown. The Corey Clement one, I thought it was a touchdown. Live, I thought it was a touchdown the first several times that I saw the replay, but I've seen the replay like 70 times now, and like the last several times that I've seen it, I'm starting to go the other way. I'm starting to think that that was not a catch by the way the rule was written. But again, I didn't have a problem with Philly maintaining that touchdown, because this kind of the spirit of it, the guy didn't really drop the ball, you know what I mean? He never... How can it not be a catch if he never dropped it? You know what I mean? Like, and I get that he was, you know, he may have had a toenail out of bounds. Like, I get it. But with the spirit of what the rule was intended to be, both of those kind of look like touchdowns. I would have been okay had they overturned the Clement one. The Ertz one was definitely a score. So anyways, I'm off that now. But yeah, a solid job all the way around by Philly. Well, not all the way around. I shouldn't say that, because their defense was atrocious. And this is a team, the Eagles, that had one of the top five defenses in the league all year. This is something that, you know, I don't think anybody really expected their defense to be this bad. I mean, I'm pulling up the numbers now. Let's see. Riveting podcast here, right, y'all? Riveting stuff. So throughout the course of the season, the Eagles were fourth in the league in yards, fewest yards allowed. They were fourth in the league in fewest points allowed. In terms of sacks, Philadelphia, middle of the road, they were tied for 15th in sacks. And as far as turnovers, as you hear me clicking in the background, they finished fourth in the league. So fourth in the league in turnovers or takeaways forced. Fourth in the league in fewest points allowed, fourth in the league in fewest yards allowed, and they got lit up. You know what I'm saying? They got lit up by New England, who was without several guys. And so they weren't that great on that side of the ball, but they made the one play that mattered most. They made a play at the right time. And sometimes it's better to be timely than it is to be good, right? I mean, they were pretty bad the whole game. The offense carried them the whole game. But when Brandon Graham rushed in there, got through on the guard, broke through and knocked the ball out of Brady's hand, it was right on time, man, with just less than 2 minutes to go. And I don't know that anybody thought that the Patriots weren't going to go down and score in that situation. I mean, who didn't think that the Patriots were going to score on that drive, y'all? I mean, granted, Graham got in there and made the play, but had he not done that, it took something like that to prevent another Brady comeback touchdown drive from happening, because I'm of the belief that there's no way that it would not have happened if not for a forced fumble or something of that nature. But Philly made the play when it mattered most. So, and again, they were aggressive all night. I love the fourth down calls. I love the fake pass or the pass play to Foles on fourth and one. They went for it a couple of times on fourth down. Really smart decisions. You know, I told, you know, friend of the podcast, Mark Hicks, Vince Hicks, Mike Hicks, and Kenneth Hicks, all family members, right? All relatives. Told them all that I really did like the call to go for it deep in New England's own territory when they ran that fake play, because you have to do something bold to beat the Patriots. You do. You have to live on the edge, because this team will not die. And we saw it again last night. You have to kill the Patriots like four times in order to beat them. And sometimes it's going to take doing something unconventional or something a little bit on the wild side in order to make that happen. And especially on a game of this magnitude. And that's what it was. Conversely, I thought New England was a little bit too conservative early in the game. We saw them kind of get down close in the red zone, and then they started running the ball, started being a little cute. You know, they Brady pass all the way down there, and then they run it a few times inside the red zone, or they run a play that didn't appear to be that great of a play call. They had the play early on to Cooks. They ran that it was a third down and maybe two or three, something like that, no more than five. They run this jet sweep to Brandon Cooks, and you know, it just didn't work. And so, you know, New England was a little conservative down there, you know, rather than running something that's, they try to trick Philadelphia rather than running something that's more so more of a general play that they would run, if that makes sense. Something that's more like them, you know. They could have ran something like that in that moment. Instead, they ran a jet sweep in that call. I didn't care for it at that time of the game. And what was interesting too was that we mentioned in my Super Bowl preview that I wrote, I said that the Eagles were a great rushing team all year. In fact, what Philly did was they ran the ball from the 20 to the 20 all season, all up and down the field. And then when they got in close, they threw it in. That's what they did. Carson Wentz did that all season. That's why Carson Wentz led the league in touchdown passes, but was nowhere near the lead in yards. And that's why Philadelphia had such a great rushing attack, but anybody that plays fantasy football knows that their running backs didn't get in the end zone. It was because the Philly running backs were racking up all sorts of yards in between the 20s, but then in a red zone, when they got in close, they were throwing it in. And then when you consider that Nick Foles comes in and plays extremely well against the Vikings, but wasn't that great against the Falcons, and then multiply that by the fact that LeGarrette Blount and Jay Ajayi did nothing in the first two games of the playoffs, the Patriots were kind of on their heels a little bit, because as I wrote on the website, they didn't have any idea what to expect. Like, we know that New England's the mantra for the Patriots, so to speak, is that they take away what you're best at, and they try to make you beat them with your second pitch or your second best option. They're not going to let you beat them with your best option, right? But what was Philly's best option? Nobody knew going into the game. Is it the rushing attack that didn't do jack in the first two playoff games? Is it Nick Foles throwing the ball all over the field just because he did it against Minnesota? We don't know. Is he going to do that again? Can he duplicate that performance? We don't know. So how was New England going to take away something when they don't know what to take away? I think that worked to the Eagles' advantage, as it turns out. So that was interesting. But the Patriots, y'all. Where do we begin with the Patriots? Yeah, man. Bill Belichick, I thought you were a defensive genius. I really did. That's what I've been sold to believe for all these years. You know, and everybody knows me. Anybody that's listened to this podcast, read on the website, knows about my feelings towards Tom Brady. I believe that he is the greatest quarterback that ever lived. I believe he's the greatest football player that ever lived. But a lot of people try to tell me that Bill Belichick is the primary reason for his success and for the Patriots' success over these last 18 years. Completely ignoring what he did in Cleveland. I actually talked to a guy online the other day that I told him, I read him this fact, which is that Bill Belichick is sub 500 in games in his career when Tom Brady's not the quarterback, right? I think his record is 55 and 63, if I'm not mistaken, something like that. It's on my Twitter account. So go to HHS report on Twitter and go back a couple of weeks. You can find the exact tweet with the exact numbers, but it's something like that. He's got a 4.66 win percentage all time in games that Tom Brady is not his quarterback. And we're talking like 7 full seasons of data here. It's not like we're talking a half season or just a handful of games. We're talking 7 full seasons. What's funny is that the people who try to take credit away from Brady will point to the handful of games during Deflategate. Oh, these 4 ball games, they went 3-1 with backups. Well, they ignore the fact that they got shut out in the 4th game, right? The Patriots did against Buffalo. And that they went 3-1 in that stretch. It's not like they went 4-0. But then they ignore the other 6.5 years of evidence that suggests that Bill Belichick is an average head coach without Tom Brady. Now, I'm not saying that Belichick is an average coach, but that was a below average performance last night from his defense, because he and Matt Patricia together work on that defense. And I don't care what anybody says, Bill Belichick is a defensive coach. He's a defense and special teams minded coach. That's how he cut his teeth in the NFL. That's where he got his start. That's how he first won his first rings as a defensive coordinator with the Giants. That's how he made his name. That's how he got his job with the Browns. That's why he continued to get his job with the Patriots, because he came back with the Patriots and he worked with the defense some more. He is a defensive guy. I don't care what anybody says. They try to give him the credit for Brady's maturation, which he deserves some credit. I'm not saying Brady made it to this point on his own. Absolutely not. But don't sit here and tell me about New England's system, quote unquote, when we never saw that system in Cleveland. We didn't see that system in New England before Brady got there. And then Brady comes along and he immediately wins the Super Bowl. Tom Brady won the Super Bowl as a red shirt sophomore in the NFL. Excuse me, a red shirt freshman. He won it as a red shirt freshman. His first season playing, which was his second season in the league, he sat the bench the first year. He's a redshirt freshman in the NFL, and he won the Super Bowl. Now, at that point, it was more of a defensive-minded team. I will fully give you that. But we haven't seen a defense like that from Bill Belichick and the Patriots in a long time, yo. A long time. And what have we seen the last few years, right? What have we seen? We've seen Bill Belichick trade away Jamie Collins. We've seen him trade away Chandler Jones, right? And then what happens? Some of your better players, maybe they retire, like Rob Ninkovich. He retires. Then Dante Hightower gets hurt in the middle of the season, done for the year. It's real easy to get rid of guys like Jamie Collins and Chandler Jones, who guys who want to get paid because they deserve it. It's easy to get rid of those guys when you have the full complement of your team. But when what happens when one of those guys goes down with an injury like Hightower did? He's your defensive leader. Then what? You know, maybe you can cover up for some of those mistakes or some of those deficiencies with some of those other players. But when a guy like Hightower goes out and you already got rid of Chandler Jones and you already got rid of Jamie Collins, then all of a sudden you're stuck. And that's what we saw. And then he turns around and he benches Malcolm Butler. The guy that saved the Super Bowl 3 years ago benches him for the entire game. Now, on its surface, we don't know what, you know, it looked questionable to say the least that he would bench him. And it looked mad arrogant that he would bench Malcolm Butler. There are reports out. I don't know if there's any truth to it or not, but there are reports out there that say that Malcolm Butler had weed on him and he broke curfew and he may have flipped out on the coaches a little bit after he got caught, something like that. And that's why he got suspended. I can understand why he would be suspended or benched in that scenario. I don't know if I would have benched him the whole game. You know what I mean? I mean, I guess you can't really question it, because it's been his way of doing things has been so successful in New England. It's kind of hard to question him at this point. Belichick, that is, for something like this, for this type of offense, if that's in fact the case and that's what happened. But man, like, your defense is just getting torched out there. Like, the guys that you have on the field are not getting it done. Your defense, Bill Belichick, gave up 41 points to the backup quarterback. And Nick Foles is probably not your average backup. But that's what happened. Okay? 41 to the backup quarterback. So I think you probably could have used Malcolm Butler. How many guys on the Patriots defense can you say unequivocally are better than Malcolm Butler? I mean, maybe, okay, I'll give you Devin McCourty. And that's about it, right? Like, who else can you say without a shadow of a doubt is better than Malcolm Butler? I can't say that about Stephon Gilmore. I can't say that about Eric Rowe. I can't, maybe Trey Flowers. Like, who else is there? Kyle Van Noy maybe is better than Malcolm Butler. There are no stars on this defense. And that's the point. Bill Belichick, once again, putting everything on Brady's shoulders and hoping that he carries the day and hoping that he can carry you to a championship. And damn it, if he didn't come close. But that's just not the way to go about doing business, man. I mean, you got to spend a little bit, Bill. You got to, you know, retain some of that talent, Bill. You got to, I don't know, put a halfway decent defensive unit out there. I mean, I don't even know how Matt Patricia got a job as a head coach and his team just gave up 41 points to the Eagles, who, I mean, they were a good offense all year. I don't want to take too much away from Philly, but man, their defense wasn't that good against Jacksonville either. You know, they had a great game against Tennessee. That was about it. I said it repeatedly on the website this year that New England's defense was not good and that the only reason that their numbers were decent was because of games they played against piss poor competition. The Eagles ain't piss poor competition. But beyond just the defense, overall, the Patriots looked wildly unprepared last night. It was just a bad coaching job by Belichick all the way around. And they were just playing uncharacteristically dumb football. The Brandon Cooks plays, we talked about one of them where the decision to even call the jet sweep on that third down deep in Philly territory, that was giving the Eagles a break, I thought. And then even on the play itself, Cooks, he tries to jump over the guy. And then he ended up catching a Sid Justice power bomb on like the 25-yard line. You're the fastest dude on the field, Brandon Cooks. How about you just give that guy a little juke and run past him or just beat him to the corner? You couldn't do that? Like, I didn't understand that at all. And then on the play that he got hurt on, I mean, we hope Brandon Cooks is okay, but I don't know what the hell he was thinking on that play. He just catches the ball and he just starts spinning around in circles like electric football. He looked like an electric football player from the 70s. Like, he just caught the ball and just starts spinning around in a circle, and then he gets decked. Somehow he spun around and still didn't see the guy that took his head off. Brandon Cooks just looked out of sorts from the beginning. Those two plays kind of were characteristic of somebody who maybe wasn't ready for that moment. That's kind of what it appeared to me anyways, because they were just out of character, just poor decisions. And just, you know, I mean, if he catches that ball and he keeps running in the same direction, he has hella yards after the catch. I mean, easy for me to say from the couch. Like, I get that. I'm not in the game. But it seemed like he should have had some spatial awareness in that moment that he just didn't have. But those two Brandon Cook plays, Gronk had a false start in the first half, which was uncharacteristic. They had the botched extra point. Or excuse me, what was that? They botched a field goal. That was horrendous. They missed an extra point also. They had the trick play where they threw it to Brady on another third down where I thought they kind of let the Eagles off the hook. I didn't mind the play itself, and it was very similar to a play that they ran against Philly a few years ago that we called out on the website in our Super Bowl preview. But I just didn't care for that call in that moment because, I mean, why on a third down are you throwing the ball to your 40-year-old quarterback on the run? Like, the difference between that play and the Nick Foles reception was that Nick Foles was in the end zone. All he had to do was turn and catch, and the play was over. You know what I'm saying? That Brady is trying to run down the field and catch while he's running, and he looked every bit of 40 years old when he's running down the field. I mean, I love Brady as much as anybody, but that's what it is. He looks every bit of 40 years old running down the field. This is a guy who was not fleet of foot when he was 20, let alone 40, okay? And you're trying to throw him a pass in the Super Bowl? I mean, is it any coincidence that play didn't work? Should we be shocked by that? That the ball went off his fingertips? That he couldn't run under the football? I mean, come on. Why let the Eagles off the hook like that and run a play to your 40-year-old quarterback who's never been a good athlete? You know? I mean, that just didn't make sense to me. That was just a poor decision on a third down. I didn't like that. And so all those things, just most all those things happened in the first half. So just really uncharacteristically dumb football by the Patriots. And then we saw it again at the end of the game when they ran that reverse after the Eagles scored the go-ahead score. They ran that reverse, and they ended up getting tackled on the 9-yard line. It's like, why? I mean, it was a great – I mean, I get it. Like, you have those plays installed for a reason. You're desperate. You need a big spark. You need a big play, something. I mean, it would have been nice if they could have just got a decent return. If they could just get a good return and get it out to the 30 or the 35-yard line. That does wonders for their chances rather than trying to do this reverse thing and end up getting tackled on the 9-yard line. Huge difference. I mean, and even if they don't get a huge return out of it, they still, with an average return, they get to the 20, right? So, I mean, I don't know. They gambled and it didn't pay off. Just a lot of strange coaching decisions. I mean, you consider how much influence Belichick has on this team from a roster construction standpoint. I mean, they go out and they get James Harrison was their big acquisition. And he had some decent plays and moments in the playoffs, but James Harrison was their big acquisition. Whereas they're letting guys go like Chandler Jones, who pretty much damn near led the league in sacks. You know, they let him walk. And he lets Chris Long walk to Philadelphia, of all places. And as a result, you have no pass rush to speak of in the game. You know what I mean? They had none. Nick Foles could have painted a painting in the pocket. That's how much time he had. I mean, it was absurd. And for us to sit here and try to act like it's a question between who's more responsible for the Patriots' success between Brady and Belichick, when the Patriots' defense has never been superb, never been, you know, like lights out to the point that it's just this. A nickname-worthy defense. The Steel Curtain. The Orange Crush. Right? The Purple People Eaters. You know? Or even know them by the year. You know, the 85 Bears. The 2000 Ravens. What were the Patriots? Even at their best in the early 2000s, they was just the Patriots? The guys from New England? The Belichick's crew? I mean, they didn't have a nickname. They didn't have a singular year where they were dominant. They never had any of that. They don't have any Hall of Famers. They got some guys that are close. Is Richard Seymour in the Hall of Fame? I don't know if he's eligible yet, but he's not in. Ty Law's been eligible. He ain't in there. Brewski's not in there. You know, I think Rodney Harrison might be, but that was largely from his time with the Chargers, same with Junior Seau, so he can't give them credit for that. I mean, Mike Vrabel's not in the Hall of Fame. Willie McGinnis is not in the Hall of Fame. Lawyer Malloy's not in the Hall of Fame. So, I mean, they had a very, very good, well-balanced defense in those early years of this dynasty, but that was a long time ago. And in those middle years from 2008, 2009 through today, when have they ever had a dominant defense? Brady's been dominant. Brady threw 50 touchdowns one year. He was unanimous MVP another year. He won another MVP at age 40. He finished runner-up in MVP two other years. Brady has been the pillar of consistency this entire time. And Bill Barnwell from ESPN wrote a piece talking about who's more responsible for the success of the Pats. And in that piece, he has the DVOA rankings of the Patriots' defense and offense over the years of the Brady and Belichick era. The offense is pretty much in the top five every single year. The defense was rarely in the top five or top 10, I think, and they haven't really been since those early years. So, no, man. I mean, Belichick, greatest coach of his generation, I'll give you that. You know, I'm not trying to say that he's some scrub by any means, but, I mean, I think his arrogance gets the best of him sometimes. And I don't think his defenses have been all they're cracked up to be. And I don't give him credit for this alleged system that apparently Brady gets no credit for creating or maintaining. I don't buy that, y'all. I don't. Do you understand that Tom Brady threw for 505 yards and 3 touchdowns and no picks yesterday? And he did this without Julian Edelman, without Malcolm Mitchell. Rob Gronkowski's coming off of a concussion. No Martellus Bennett. Brandon Cooks gets knocked out of the game in the first quarter. Look what he's working with. He's working with scraps. Making miracles with scraps, like your mama did on Thanksgiving. And I see people online trying to argue me that Brady was the reason they lost, or that You know, they're trying to clown Brady as if he's some kind of failure. Like, win, lose, or draw, the guy has more Super Bowl rings as a starting quarterback than anybody ever. And he's been to more Super Bowls than anybody ever. Do you understand that? I mean, it blows my mind. It blows my mind how many people try to come at me today. You know, they want to wait till the game is over and then say, I saw a guy online say, Brady had to win. I thought Brady had to win yesterday, and then I would have put him over Joe Montana. But no, Joe's still the GOAT. I'm just like, I don't even argue with these people anymore. It's like, why is the bar so much higher for Tom Brady than every other quarterback that's ever played the game? Why are there so many people that refuse to give it up to him? When I vividly remember in 2009, when the Colts were in their second Super Bowl with Peyton Manning, and Peyton was 1-0 in the Super Bowl, but had choked a bunch of years before, but he was 1-0 in the Super Bowl. And people said, if he beats the Saints today, is Peyton the greatest of all time? They were ready to give that to Peyton Manning on his second Super Bowl trip. Meanwhile, and this is before the 55 touchdown year, right? Meanwhile, Brady has gone to 8 Super Bowls. He's won 5 of them. And people were like, yeah, dog. I mean, I would have gave it to him had he won yesterday, but, you know, he didn't win it, so I got to give it to Joe, man. Got to give it to Joe Montana, cool Joe. Why? Is it the 4-0 thing? Is that what it is? The dumbest argument in sports, that a person that goes undefeated in the championship round is somehow better than somebody who's not undefeated but went more times? As if it's some kind of penalty for going to the championship round and losing? Is that what it is? Because here's what people don't seem to understand. You can't win the Super Bowl unless you win all the games before the Super Bowl, okay? That's what people don't seem to understand about the Joe Montana thing. First of all, they don't want to give Terry Bradshaw any credit. If they're stuck on the 4-0 thing, then Bradshaw should be right there with Montana in their eyes. That's the first thing. The second thing is, you have to win all the games in order to win the Super Bowl. You don't just play the Super Bowl, okay? There's been plenty of games where Joe Montana got his behind kicked. And I, two that come to mind is two games against the Giants where he only scored 3 points. He only led his team, one of the greatest offensive teams of all time, the 49ers of the 80s, led by Bill Walsh, who was a visionary of offensive football, installed the West Coast offense, which is still being used and is still a championship-level offense 35 years after the fact, after its inception, right? 35 years later, it's still running. People are still running it and winning with that offense. That's the team that he had, and he only scored 3 points against the Giants twice in the playoffs in the 80s. You know? But that's out the window because he's 4-0 in the Super Bowl. That doesn't make any sense. It doesn't. It's not perfection. It's not perfection unless he wins it every year, and he didn't win it every year. He did not win the championship every single year, so he's not perfect. He won all his games in the Super Bowl, but he's not a perfect quarterback. There's no such thing as the perfect quarterback. Tom Brady's not the perfect quarterback. He wasn't perfect yesterday, but the one thing that people kept talking about the most after the game was the pass he dropped. If you're telling me that my quarterback is going to throw for 500 yards and 3 scores, and that his biggest mistake was going to be dropping a pass, I'll take it, okay? I'll take it. I'll take it 10 times. I'll take it 11 times out of 10. I'll take it 8 days a week, okay? It's just mind-boggling the lengths that people go to discredit Tom Brady, that it drives me to hammer the point home more so on this podcast and more so on the website. And I don't like being that guy necessarily that's always harping on the same thing, but it's like I wouldn't have to do that if people would just use their brains and be objective for just a second. Just try. Can you just try to be objective? I know you don't like the Patriots because they win and they beat your team's ass all the time. Here's my thing. I'm from Cleveland, so I came to the realization that, you know what, if my team was getting their ass kicked by the Patriots every year in the playoffs, I probably wouldn't like Tom Brady either. But the truth of the matter is that my team, the Browns, have been so bad over the last 20 years, they haven't even come close to playing the Pats in the playoffs. So There's no reason for me to hate on Brady. But these other people can't even accept the fact that they just are mad because he's better. You know? They want to hold the Spygate thing on him. As if every team in the league wasn't doing the same thing beforehand, and the Patriots just continued to do it after the league sent out a notice saying you can't do it anymore. And then the year after Spygate, they went undefeated and had just about the greatest team in NBA history, or excuse me, the greatest team in NFL history, with the only exception being that they lost the Super Bowl that year on a fluke play. But they went undefeated and went back to the Super Bowl. So that voids out any type of notion that Spygate was the reason for their success, because the year afterwards, they didn't lose any games until the very end, right? Then they try to do the Deflategate thing. Same thing. They take a story that's a non-story. They blow it up because it's the Patriots. The Colts balls were underinflated too. The same report said the Colts balls were underinflated and nobody got suspended from the Colts. But Brady gets suspended and he comes back and he wins the Super Bowl anyways twice. He won two Super Bowls post-Deflategate. But you still want to hold the cheating thing over him as if he gained an advantage from that? It just, y'all just got to stop. Just stop it. It's just, it's enough. As much as, you know, as fun as it is to talk about Brady's greatness, you know, I know that people around me get annoyed with the extent of which I talk about him. I know. I get it. I know it. I get it. But what do you expect me to do when I see the idiocy that's taking place all day long? It's mind-boggling how obtuse people are about this debate. Like, you don't have to like the Patriots and you don't have to like Tom Brady, but people are just going to any length to discredit him, that they're trying to say that he lost the game because he dropped the pass. He's not a receiver. It was a trick play. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, he dropped the pass, but if that's the worst thing he did, then so be it. And you know what? He fumbled the football too. So you could put that on him if you want. I would rather give Brandon Graham the credit and say that he went in there and he punched the ball out of Brady's hand. And damn it, if that wasn't a great play. It's almost like an interception. Like, if a guy throws an interception, it could be that it was a bad pass, in which case that's the quarterback's at fault. It could have been a bad read, in which case the quarterback's at fault. It could have been the receiver that made a mistake, in which case the quarterback is not at fault. Or it could be that the defender just made a great play. And that's not the quarterback's fault either. Sometimes the guy on the other team who gets paid millions of dollars makes a great play. I look at the Brady fumble as Brandon Graham got in there and he punched the ball out. That was a great play. Brady wasn't in the pocket for 15 seconds holding on to the ball. The pocket was collapsing. The guy got in there. He punched it out. That's a great play. You got to tip your hat to him. But Tom Brady was phenomenal. No quarterback has ever thrown for 500 yards, three scores, and no picks in the history of football and lost the game until yesterday. And that tells you how horrendous Bill Belichick and Matt Patricia's defense was yesterday. That's what that should tell you. I mean, we wrote about it on the website that the Patriots defense had mastered the art of bending but not breaking. And they especially never broke late in games. Well, they broke yesterday and they broke late, right? Last drive of the game for the Eagles, not the very last drive, but the second to last drive with the game on the line. The Eagles marched right down the field, converted on fourth downs, and threw the touchdown pass to Zach Ertz, man. And they broke. The Patriots did not get the stop that they got. They got the stop against the Seahawks. They got the stop against, you know, they got several stops against Atlanta. They didn't get the stop that they needed. They didn't get the one big play. They didn't get the one turnover that they needed in the second half to sway things. And that's why you have to give Philadelphia a ton of credit. And one last note on the 49ers. Isn't it funny how they label Brady a quote-unquote system quarterback when Joe Montana is the one that got to play with Bill Walsh, and Joe Montana is the one that left Bill Walsh and he was replaced by Steve Young, actually, and then Bill Walsh also left and was replaced by George Seifert, but the same system stayed in place in San Francisco, and they won multiple Super Bowls. They won a Super Bowl with Joe Montana after Bill Walsh left, and then they won a Super Bowl with George Seifert and Steve Young after Joe Montana left. So that system was still in place. And Steve Young and George Seifert won with that system. And you know it was a system because George Seifert was the defensive coordinator. He was a defensive guy running that same offensive system. But is Joe Montana ever penalized for this? Is he still eligible for the GOAT conversation, even though he was clearly a system quarterback? Not to say that he wasn't great without it, but we don't really know. We just know that he was great with it. Does Joe Montana ever get called a system quarterback? What is the system that's been in New England? I haven't seen anybody duplicated anyplace else. I haven't seen Belichick have any success in New England with any other quarterback other than Brady. Any real success, that is. But somehow, Brady's the system quarterback and Joe Montana isn't. But anyways, although, two more notes on the Eagles before we cut out, y'all. First thing is, and I said this at the start of the year, we got to expand our thinking a little bit when it comes to what quarterbacks can win the Super Bowl. I mean, I said this at the very start of the season. I mean, we talked about Alex Smith, and we talked about some of these other guys that are out there. And, you know, with Brady being in his 40s, Manning's gone. Eli Manning's about 36 years old, 37. Drew Brees is about 40 almost, 39. Actually, I think he just turned 39. You know, Phillip Rivers is in his late 30s. That era of quarterbacks, they're fading away. Romo's gone, right? Like, those guys are leaving this sport. So we really got to reevaluate this thing going forward. I mean, we all love Aaron Rodgers, but even Aaron Rodgers has only won one Super Bowl in his entire 10-year career. So it's not a given that just because you have the best quarterback, you're going to win, right? I mean, we saw that last night. We see it with the Packers. That's just what it is. But so if it's not going to be Aaron Rodgers every year, and if it's not going to be Tom Brady every year, and if Brees and Rivers and these other guys are leaving, who's going to be the one that we can actually envision winning the Super Bowl? I mean, we really need to start identifying those quarterbacks, whether they're young guys, maybe they're veteran guys, they've been around for a few years, maybe it's Andrew Luck, he's coming off an injury, you know, maybe it's a young guy, maybe it's a Cam Newton, maybe it's a Matt Ryan, maybe it's a Carson Wentz, maybe, I mean, it seems like Carson Wentz should be able to do it, right? Even when we look at these really young guys, you know, we still got Derek Carr, we still got Winston and Mariota, we still got, I mean, Blake Bortles got to the conference finals this year, or the AFC Championship game, I should call it. We have to seriously consider what it means to be a Super Bowl winning quarterback, because the game of football is infinitely easier when you have a great quarterback. But there's only a handful of great quarterbacks. I'm talking like five or less. But that doesn't mean you can't win a Super Bowl. And we know that now. So note to all those teams that are trying to build their franchise up. It's nice to go out and get the guy. But maybe you can win a Super Bowl with Kirk Cousins. Maybe you can win a Super Bowl with Alex Smith. Maybe you can win a Super Bowl with Ryan Tannehill. This stuff sounds crazy that I'm saying. But we've seen, I mean, we just saw Nick Foles, Case Keenum, and Blake Bortles in championship weekend. We just saw that. And we've seen Joe Flacco, Eli Manning, Trent Dilfer, Brad Johnson, and Nick Foles all win Super Bowls in the last 20 years. You know, I just named five guys, and they have six rings between them. So it can be done, y'all. I'm just saying, like, there's more than one way to skin a cat. So, you know, build yourself up a great defense. I mean, the best way to do it, and I just had a conversation with a friend of the podcast, Anthony Houston, about it. The best way to do it is to have a pretty good quarterback that outperforms his contract, and then to take that, but a modest contract, right? A pretty good quarterback with a modest contract, and that quarterback outperforms that contract, and then the rest of that money that you're not spending on a premium quarterback is spread out amongst the roster. That's the way to do it. I mean, if you have to pay $20 million for Kirk Cousins, lots of luck. You know what I'm saying? If you can get Kirk Cousins for half that price, you might win a Super Bowl. And that's just what it is. And then the last thing I'll say is that there was one person, as I sat back and listened to all the commentary about the Super Bowl and all that, was one person I felt sorry for, and it was not Tom Brady. I know that's what you're thinking. It was not any of his children. It was not Alex Guerrero or anything that we saw on Tom versus Time. It's not Giselle. None of that stuff. I know y'all think, you know, it's all about Brady with me. That's not who I'm thinking of. And speaking of Alex Guerrero, go out on the hiphopsportsreport.com and please check out our article where we compare the Patriots run to that of Rockefeller Records. Pretty interesting stuff. But the one person that I felt sorry for, y'all, after this game was Dan Quinn. Who was Dan Quinn? You're probably thinking, ah, that name sounds familiar. Who was that? Dan Quinn is the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, and he was in Doug Peterson's spot just last season. He had the Patriots on the ropes in the Super Bowl, but he couldn't close the deal. And what was the big criticism of Dan Quinn after last year's game? It was that the Falcons were too aggressive. Do you remember that? The Falcons are too aggressive. Why are they throwing the ball with the lead? Why are they trying to kill off the Patriots with the pass? Why they can't stop the run? Why don't you just hand it off? Why not, you know? And for the second straight Super Bowl, the Patriots defense noticed they could not stop the run or the pass. We just have to throw that out there because LeGarrette Blount and Jay Ajayi both averaged 6 yards a carry. Nick Foles throwing for 373 yards and 3 scores or whatever it was. Yeah, they couldn't stop the run or the pass last year or this year, but that's beside the point. Let me just take something away. Something. But yeah, Dan Quinn, man, he had the same vibe about him. Like, they were on the ropes, and they were still throwing the ball late in the game. And afterwards, you know, they had the big sack. Hightower forced the fumble on Matt Ryan, and then afterwards, people are like, why were you throwing in that situation? And Dan Quinn was like, this is who we've been all year. We've been a team that is aggressive and that guns it, man, and we weren't going to change who we are at this point in the season. This is what got us here. And he got killed for that shit. Do you remember that? Do you remember when Dan Quinn said that? He got roasted, and he got roasted all last year for being overly aggressive. And now, a year later, here's Doug Peterson coming along with a backup quarterback, not Matt Ryan, not the league MVP, but a backup quarterback, and he's even more aggressive. He's going for it on fourth down. He's rolling the dice. He's starting the game off throwing the ball. He's doing everything. He's running trick plays. Everything's on the table. And then he gets up in front of the podium, and he tells, I think it was Dan Patrick that interviewed him right when they were handing him the trophy, and they said, you know, how'd you do it? How did you slay the dragon that is the New England Patriots? And he says, man, Dan, we've been aggressive all year, man, and this is just who we are. And everybody goes, ah, right? And then the media types get on TV today and say, oh, Doug Peterson was so aggressive. It was brilliant. It wasn't brilliant last year when Dan Quinn did it, right? And when he said as much, you killed him for it. So the hypocrisy of some of these media folks is just funny to me. And what's the end result? The end result is that execution is all that matters. Right? That's what this is about. Did you execute or did you not execute? Nobody would have had a problem with the Falcons being aggressive if they would have executed. Everybody would say, man, them Falcons, man, they really put the pedal to the metal. They were up 25 points on New England and they still poured it on because they know Tom Brady is Captain Comeback and he's the comeback kid and he's going to do it again. And you got to kill him 1,000 times in order to beat that team. So they just went at him and they cut their head off. Right? And you would applaud them for that, but they didn't execute. Devontae Freeman missed the. Tevin Coleman got hurt. I think they had Devontae Freeman in on the passing down situation. Devontae Freeman missed the block. Dont'a Hightower got in, forced a fumble on Matt Ryan, turned the game around. They didn't execute. The Eagles, on the other hand, didn't make any mistakes like that in the second half. No catastrophic mistakes. All they did maybe was they had a little bit of a clock management issue. You know, Nelson Aguilar ran out of bounds late, that kind of thing. Minor stuff, right? No major mistakes on the part of the Eagles late in that game, and they didn't beat themselves. And that's what Atlanta did. That's what Seattle did. That's what Jacksonville, you could argue, they did. These teams are making some mistakes here and there and beating themselves. That's not what the Eagles did yesterday. They executed. And I say that even though it was easier for Doug Peterson to coach in his situation than it was for Dan Quinn to coach in his situation last year, because Dan Quinn was trying to protect the lead last year, whereas Doug Peterson had lost the lead this year. So it was real easy late in that game for him to say, yeah, go for it on fourth down. Yeah, we're gonna pass it here. Yeah, we're gonna, you know, air it out here. It was a much different game being in a competitive back and forth kind of contest where you knew you had to be aggressive and keep scoring because your defense couldn't stop them from the start of the second half versus Atlanta, who was trying to protect this lead. It was much easier. You know, again, understand what I'm saying. I'm not trying to discredit Doug Peterson, but it was easier for Doug Peterson to coach in his circumstances, I think, than it was for Dan Quinn to coach in his circumstances trying to protect that lead and New England coming back on him. But Philly executed, and they deserve to win the Super Bowl. So congratulations to the Philadelphia Eagles. Thank you all for listening. Don't let anybody tell you that Tom Brady's not the GOAT. They're morons. But just because you're the GOAT doesn't mean you win them all. And just because you're the GOAT doesn't mean you're flawless. That's the other thing. People love to just, you know, if you lose the game and you're not flawless, you're going to get killed for it. And if you win the game and you do one notch above nothing, you get all the credit. Doesn't make a ton of sense, y'all. Be smarter, sports fans. This is Jay Hicks, Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast, signing off. We're going to be back at y'all pretty soon. We got a whole bunch of NBA stuff to get to coming up, the trade deadline and all the stuff going on, especially in Cleveland and all this turmoil and all that stuff. I'm sick of it. Got a lot of opinions on that. The Grammy Awards, Jay-Z got hosed, obviously. Jay-Z gets 8 nominations, wins 0 awards. He should have had Rap Album of the Year. I did not expect him or Kendrick to win Album of the Year, though. That's been well documented on hiphopsportsreport.com, so is what it is. But shout out to Kendrick for taking home those trophies. And that's about it, y'all. I'm going to go ahead and sign off and go to bed. But again, man, shout out to the Eagles and shout out to the city of Philadelphia. Keep having a good time, y'all. Be safe. Don't nobody get shot at that parade or nothing like that. And free Meek Mill. All of you reporters made it hard on them. Never write about me like him. Never make me think the hard.